NASA becomes the second large agency to tell its contracting officers not to trust the prices under the General Services Administration's schedule contract. Instead, the space agency's contracting experts must analyze prices before signing on the task order on that dotted line. Federal News Radio's executive editor Jason Miller writes about this growing trend in his biweekly feature, Inside the Reporter's Notebook, and Jason joins us now with details. Good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
All right, so what's going on? Why did NASA feel it has to issue a memo about GSA pricing?
Well, what we're seeing is this growing trend among agencies where they're saying, you know, at one time, GSA's schedule prices were considered fair and reasonable. That's what the FAR says. And I'm not going to quote FAR Part 15 or whatever it is because I'm no expert, I'm no lawyer. There's thousands of people in the D.C.
great
area
though.
That are much better than us. But basically what they're saying is they have determined that fair and reasonable when GSA signs the contract with the vendor is fair and reasonable at that point. Now, when there's a task order or a delivery order, when there's volume discounts, all those things, what NASA is telling its contracting officers to do is to take a second and a third look, do more research, make sure you are getting the best price. And this is actually following on the same memo that, well, a very similar memo that Dick Ginman, the head of defense acquisition and policy, issued about a couple weeks before the NASA memo. Now, if you remember, our colleague Jared Serbu broke that story about the DOD memo. But the NASA memo didn't get a lot of attention. It was very quiet. And only this week last week at an Affirm event, did Tom Sharp over at the GSA FAS commissioner mention that NASA had been the second agency to issue such a memo. And remember, these are two very big agencies that have a very big procurement budgets that are now saying GSA's prices need a second look.
So GSA, of course, is the third agency that's part of this whole FAR council. You got NASA and DOD driving policies. What does GSA say about all this?
Right. Now, I did get a chance to sit down with Tom Sharp, the Federal Acquisition Service Commissioner, after that Affirm event, and asked him about those two deviations. And he was very positive, actually. He said, you know, listen, I support Dick Ginman in terms of what he's telling his contracting workforce to do, which is apply techniques to get the best price, the best value, and other things that are important to taxpayers. So he outwardly is saying, yes, these are good things that, you know, you should take a second look. And he said, listen, but at the same time, GSA is taking steps that maybe these deviations won't be necessary in the next, you know, year or two. He says, listen, Sharp says they're standardizing part numbers and descriptions on the schedules, and then GSA can use that data to make better decisions about how much price variability is needed on the schedule. And I'll give you an example. Dick Ginman over at Defense Department uses this example. You can buy a stapler, a regular stapler that most people have on their desks, and the price variability goes anywhere from $12 to $31. Now, the question is, why is there such a big price variability? Because why is one stapler worth $31, one's worth $12 when it's basically the same stapler? No one can really answer that, and that's why NASA now and DOD have said to their contracting officers, don't just accept right on face value, do your own research. And Tom Sharp says, fine, do your own research, but we're going to give you the tools to help you do that research, and then maybe you're going to say to yourselves, hey, this deviation is not necessary anymore.
I mean, that's, I guess, the underlying all this is the idea that GSA prices, MAS, multiple award schedule prices, are dynamic, and that the vendor is supposed to keep adjusting them according to whatever it's giving its best customers from time to time, but they don't always do that.
Well, but then they get caught in that False Claims Act. We've seen a huge increase in the number of False Claim Act lawsuits and cases coming against contractors on the GSA schedule. But I think what's also happening is contracting officers are just saying, again, I'm going to buy a widget. Well, let me go to the GSA schedule. Oh, the price for that widget is $5. Fine, I'll buy it. Without saying, well, let me look at 10 widgets and see if they're all in that $5 range. Or maybe someone's offering a widget for $250 and it's the same exact widget that was for $10. I'll save the government money. I think that's the bigger concern. And I think you're absolutely right. Vendors are expected to modify their prices continually. I heard one case where one big IT contractor was waiting on a modification from GSA from February. They submitted it back in February, and here we are, August, and they are still waiting for the approval. So there are some backups with GSA's modification process, at least what I'm hearing from some vendors, and I think that may be part of the concern as well, that the volume of modifications GSA just can't keep up with. So what NASA and DOD and maybe soon others are going to are telling their contracting officers, hey, just take a second and a third look, make sure you are getting the best price. And the big difference here, Tom, is that's not what has been happening over the last almost 20 years of the schedules. And that's why it's really causing a lot of concern.
And that means, too, that the vendors have to get permission from GSA to lower prices as well as raise them?
Well, right. So anytime you modify your schedule, it's not necessarily permission to lower or raise, but your schedule contract says we negotiated, again, the widget at $5. Now, if your widget's only costing you $3 and you want to lower your price, or maybe the natural resource for your widget just got a lot more scarce or got more expensive on the global market and you have to increase your price for that widget, again, that's the modification. It's not really GSA approval per se, but just to change your schedule, you need approval.
We're speaking with Federal News Radio's executive editor, Jason Miller. And regarding the tool that GSA wants to deploy so that people can see what market basket pricing is for different commodities, doesn't that capability already exist in the private sector? I mean, I was literally looking for a pencil sharpener the other day, one you crank, and there's a whole bunch of different kinds, and I found one that looked pretty cool. And then I clicked, and there were 15 different vendors selling it, all for slightly different prices. I mean, that information is out there in the private sector. Can't GSA shortcut all this by just using one of those technologies?
So I think one of the things GSA is doing, because terms and conditions are so specific for the government, and because the government is supposed to get the lowest price possible, I think you can't just pick up a commercial type of software and put it into GSA so easily. I think there are some modifications that we needed, and GSA is looking at that. I mean, we reported last week as part of the changes around category management and the hallways and things of that nature. That's all going to come together around how much money agencies are spending for specific products and services. The OMB's initiative around the prices paid portal is another initiative that goes right down this line, is how much price variability is there and why is there this price variability? And I think that in the end is the biggest concern that at least I'm hearing from NASA and DOD.
And looking at some other matters in your column published today at federalnewsradio.com, you're talking about Eagle 2 contract, and there's news there.
Exactly. Now, Eagle 2 is the big IT contract that a lot of vendors have been waiting for DHS to finally make the full awards for, to get through all the protests. And I've been told by multiple sources that DHS has quietly been telling the 60-plus vendors under the Eagle 2 contract, and we're specifically talking about functional category 1. Now, there's four functional categories, but this is the functional category 1, the biggest, the one that most vendors are most excited about under the unrestricted version of Eagle, is now open for business and has started to accept task orders and delivery orders. Now, functional category 1 includes anything from systems design to development, implementation, and integration, software design and development, operations and maintenance, such as help desk and collaboration services, and network and security operations. So that's really the whole, if you will, the big area that vendors see a lot of money coming through Eagle from. And now that it's open for business, now they feel like DHS is confident they've gotten past the protest stage and a lot of the other kind of roadblocks that they've seen over the last 3 years. And this has been a long procurement to get out the door. 2010 is when it was first, the RFP first was issued.
Yeah, the Eagle's looking a little gray around the gills there. Now, these services offered, system design, development, as you mentioned, implementation, integration, these are all profitable areas for a lot of vendors. Are the task orders considered to be firm fixed price for each of these service categories, or what types of contracts are they?
For the most part, I think they are firm fixed price. I'd have to look into the specifics of the contract to tell you if they offer other kinds of contract opportunities like labor hours or time and materials. I'm not sure about that 100%. But you're right, this is a very profitable area. I mean, just looking at the first Eagle contract, now DHS lists data under Eagle, what they call the original Eagle contract, only through 2011. So we're still missing the last 2.5 years of data. But just from 2006 to 2011, DHS spent $11.4 billion on 606 task orders. So that's a huge amount of money. They expect Eagle 2 to be just as profitable. And in fact, I did a quick search and found 23 potential procurements scheduled to go through Eagle 2. And that was on DHS Forecast website. And they range from anything from $100 million to $10 billion Citizen Immigration Service Joint Engineering Sustainment Program contract to FEMA's $10 to $20 million program for disaster management's eGov initiative. So you can see there's a wide range of task orders that are on the way.
And some pretty big projects, some complicated stuff going on there.
Right. I mean, I'm even told that DHS may look at, for instance, their ECS, which is their enterprise computing system. And anyways, their follow-on to their data center contract may go through Eagle. And I'm also being told that FEMA's Enterprise Applications Development Integration Sustainment, EDIS, which could be worth $1 billion, and its Commits acquisition to follow on, again, another big IT acquisition, could also both go through Eagle. So there's a lot of money that are being prepped up to go through Eagle, too. And I think that's why there's so much contention around the contract and so much interest. And, again, now that it's, as I said, landed, the Eagle has landed, things are going to start getting ramped up.
All right, sounds like this eagle is going to soar instead of lay an egg, huh?
There you go. Well, I think a lot of vendors hope that, and we'll see what happens if how the task order protests start happening and what else kind of transpires as Eagle 2 takes off.
And getting back to GSA, that never-ending source of great news and gossip, a lot of change for GSA's own acquisition executives, you're reporting.
Exactly. Now, what I think was great about what we can do with this inside the reporter's notebook. Of course, I write it, so I always think it's great. But I think the people news, people like people news. So one of the things that I found out about GSA was Donna Jenkins, who's been running the Federal Acquisition Institute, is actually going to come into the operational side, if you will. And she's actually going to replace Houston Taylor. And she's going to be the new assistant commissioner for the Office of Acquisition Management. Now, Houston Taylor's not leaving government. He's actually getting a new role. He'll be the assistant commissioner in the Office of Customer Accounts and Research. So I think both of these moves are interesting. Houston Taylor has been in that role, I want to say, for about 5 or 6, maybe even 7 years now. And Donna's been in that FAI role for several years and really has gotten the relationship closer with the Defense Acquisition University. And really, I think, has done a really nice job of getting, courses set up and agencies in training in progress. So I think it's a good move for both of them to kind of take on these new roles, new challenges.
All right. So it sounds like Tom Sharp is really, I mean, he's been there, what, a year and a half now?
About 15 to 18 months.
Yeah. Seems like he is starting to really make a tangible mark across the agency.
I think so. I mean, one thing that you have to be aware of is the Federal Acquisition Service plays such a key role, and people don't realize the role it plays in government. And I think people forget about that. And I think the White House forgets about it. I think Congress forgets about it. And I think what Tom is doing is coming in, looking across, going, what needs to be updated? What needs to be changed? And I think that what we're seeing are all the pieces of that change that's happening.
All right. Jason Miller is Federal News Radio's executive editor. And we thank you for joining us, as always.
My pleasure.